Hello again, Gallatin Valley. We have a great show today. This is an area of health and happiness we have not explored in depth before today. While we focus on areas of mental health, today's topic is perfect to enhance health and happiness. I'm Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. We appreciate the support of the Public Education Committee, of the Montana Psychological Association, and of KGVM. Dr. Suzanne will now introduce today's program.
There's an entire new science which most of us, including me, have not heard of. It's called plant neurobiology. Amazingly, it's looking in part to answer the age-old question, do plants communicate? And guess what the answer is? Yes, they do communicate. In fact, plant communication extends far beyond sound. Plants can communicate with each other through chemical signals released into the air or through the soil. They can warn neighboring plants of impending danger, attract beneficial insects, or even repel harmful pests. For instance, when a plant is attacked by herbivores, it can release organic compounds into the air, which can be detected by neighboring plants, which then activate their own defense mechanisms in anticipation of attack. Plants can also communicate through their roots, using a network of fungal filaments. This network allows plants to exchange nutrients, water, and even information with each other. It's called, instead of the World Wide Web, it's called the Wood Wide Web, as it's sometimes known, and it highlights the interconnectedness of plants and the importance of considering the entire ecosystem when studying plant communication. We will explore the plant world today with some true garden gurus. Bruce and Christy Copeland, avid gardeners who have the most truly golden garden of joy you have ever seen. Just every part of it is tremendous. And we're so grateful and honored to have Phyllis White, the president of the local garden club, with us today. Welcome, Phyllis and Bruce and Christy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, maybe we could start with Bruce and Christy and ask them, I believe you moved here from Washington, D.C. How did it occur to you to make the most beautiful, huge garden with every kind of vegetable and flower Montana knows? How did that occur to you? How did that develop as a concept?
Well, when Bruce and I met, we were living in Washington, D.C., and we both had some experience with gardening before we met, but we were able to get a plot in a community garden there, and that kind of started our gardening together. And through that space, we planted a number of different things, even though it was small, and we particularly enjoyed the socializing there, interacting with other people in the garden, sharing seeds and plant material and information and knowledge. And I would say that was our start. And then we moved outside of DC and had a very much of a shade garden at that point, where we weren't able to do much in vegetables. And then when we moved to Montana, it was just, we had a clean slate here on the property that we bought and built our house. And bit by bit, we grew our garden and to what it is today.
Well, that's right. And when we were in D.C., the interesting thing was that the community garden was quite the social scene, with these small plots and probably 50 to 100 gardens, and people were interacting, and it became a real social event to go to your garden. And that, to some extent, has extended to the present time. Some of the benefits of gardening do involve the social aspect and sharing and getting others involved. And we particularly enjoyed that, doing that over the years.
I'd have to say their garden is really a social spot as well. They have evening concerts as the sun is setting with local wonderful musicians, and there you are in the midst of the flowers and the beautiful vegetables and the trees and the rivers nearby. So when you think of idyllic gardens, I think we have one there. And thank you for joining us to tell about this process. And we'd like to also talk to Phyllis. Now, how did you become interested in plants and flowers, Phyllis?
Well, as I recall, I was about 10, and I grew up in Pennsylvania, and my first job was to pick up fallen apples. And it proceeded on from there, weeding in my mother's garden. My grandmother, I remember, she had asparagus and rhubarb and so on around her house. And I moved to Montana over 50 years ago, and I've always gardened since then. Sometimes it's a big garden, and I've now to my greenhouse and container gardens. So I've done the whole spectrum of gardening. One of the things I love the most is the socialization, as Bruce was saying, and Christy. It's so fun to meet other gardeners and talk about what's growing and what your problems are getting it to grow. So I love that.
Oh, yes. And every article talked about the socialization that comes with a garden and plants and flowers and people. Go ahead, Bruce. Sorry. Well, I was just talking about, just the interaction when we moved here about 8 years ago. I was so excited when springtime came. I went out in March and planted marigolds, which the plant lady told me for sure would grow. And of course, they froze completely solid a couple of days later. And so it's been a real learning process for us. And yes, it was funny. We love having gurus like Bruce and Cindy and Phyllis. And maybe, Phyllis, you could tell us about the garden club and how people could join up, what they do, what kind of activities.
Well, there are three garden clubs in the Gallatin Valley that I know of. The one I started about 10 years ago is the Belgrade Bloomers Garden Club. We're in Belgrade, and we have about two dozen gardeners that have joined that. There's also one in Bozeman called the Gallatin Empire Garden Club, and that's been going for 70 years. And then there's the Gallatin Gardeners, which is a large club that was organized by some of the horticulture professors at MSU and has grown big, and they do a lot of good community involvement work. So I have progressed through the garden club ladder and served as the president of the state organization. And then I went on and served at the National Garden Club level for about 6 or 8 years.
Wow.
So I have all these experiences from the nitty-gritty down to in the soil up to the leadership and how to communicate with other people about gardening. That I was head of communication for NGC National Garden Club.
That's impressive and so important to the world these days with changes in climate and all. We're all can, I feel like, possibly have to work together on these issues. How are you feeling right now, Cindy and Bruce and Phyllis, about the
Christy.
Christy.
I didn't hear that last word about.
How are you feeling about the outlook for the world and the plants that we're so taking for granted, and what could be some good objectives you as the garden president could tell us that we should keep in mind?
I just did a big tour of Europe, looking at gardens and talking to people over there. They are really addressing climate change because it is affecting it's affecting all the horticulture, from commercial down to the individual gardener. I think what people are looking at is trying to adjust with the time period, the heat, and what grows as things warm up or the weather becomes more turbulent. And I think that's what we're doing here in the Gallatin Valley. We are adjusting, and we can grow things that take longer, but we're drying out too, so water is an important thing to think about.
Exactly.
We certainly have seen changes in especially with vegetables and what we can grow in the Gallatin Valley over the last 20 years. We really got started around 2000, and you couldn't grow melons. It would be tough to grow peppers and eggplant, but now those are within reach in the Bozeman area. So I think our growing season now is probably, if you count the growing season as the last frost of the spring to the first frost of the fall, it's probably 3 to 4 week longer growing season. We didn't have a hard frost last year until really close to the beginning of November. Things have definitely changed, and we're all trying to adapt to it.
Oh my goodness,
and of course,
yes.
We're all concerned about the pollinator situation. And our club, in fact, has at the Belgrade Library a raised bed that we're going to be planting pollinator flowers again this year and handing out seeds at their event coming up to encourage people to support the pollinators.
Good idea. That's a great idea. Just hand out seeds that will help with that. Do you all, have you heard about bee water? I've just heard this year that bees like a drink of water, and to set out a shallow dish with a little bit of water and put stones in it such that they can sit on the edge of the stone and reach over and get a drink of water. And we have a little garden area, and we put those out, and within minutes we had bees coming to sit on the rock and take a drink. And it's just adorable to see them. They lean over, and their little wings and backs are up in the air, just wiggling back and forth. They're drinking so hard. And so that's something I had not heard about or known about till just recently, but it's so easy to set out a dish and add some fresh water each day for the bees, and make sure the stones are right near the water so they don't fall in, because they drown otherwise, the article said.
Great idea.
I think that's true. It also applies to butterflies, which are pollinators.
Yes.
And they come and do the same thing. It's called puddling. And so you can attract butterflies to your garden with the same water.
That's so good. And we're just starting to see our first few bees over here. We live right in town. And so we've got our waters out for them. I understood from another follow-up article that they're especially thirsty when they first come out. And this having been such a dry spring, it would really be helpful for everybody to try to set out a bee water.
I agree. I think that's good.
There was a recent,
it can't hurt.
A recent documentary about bees, I think, on Netflix. Everybody ought to see. It's fantastic information that I would have never guessed about bees.
And, mm-hmm. yeah, and we've had bee experts on before, and there's so much wonderful information and exciting information about bees. And they're actually our very best, most necessary friends on this earth. So taking care of a bee is like taking care of your children.
That's right. They're our food source. You know, we have to have that, our food pollinated to make fruit and vegetables. So that's wonderful.
And there's evidence that the bee populations are crashing a bit. So it's particularly important at this moment in time to support the pollinators.
And we had a bee expert on that was explaining that in the fall, the beekeepers, especially in Montana, would load up the beehives and carry the bees to California so they could pollinate the trees and flowers that grow there. But they've realized that that's very hard on the bee populations. And so they're going to stop doing that as of this year. We were finding out. But just think. And the bee expert also told us if a bee accidentally gets in your car, don't drive away with it if they get too far from their hive. They cannot find it again, and they can't survive without their group. So be sure and keep your bees close to home and give them some nice water, and even sugar water is helpful in the early spring.
Well, that's news to me. That's wonderful.
Looking at the growing season this year, give us some good tips on what you think should be planted first. I don't recommend marigolds right now, but you could fill us in on where to start, and especially for new gardeners. And I'd like you to address also, like Bruce and Christy started out, it doesn't take a large space, just a planting box or small areas. When we were in Japan, everywhere you looked, there'd be a little section of plants. They would put a pot in an alleyway. They would add a little soil to a box at the edge of the corner. Everywhere you looked, they were growing fruits and veggies and flowers. So we should really pick up on that here, I believe, in the United States. And maybe you guys could give us some early planting tips.
Well, you can plant in containers, or you can plant in a regular vegetable bed or a raised bed. There's all kinds of different options. And as far as vegetables are concerned, there are certain vegetables that are more cold hardy than others that you can get in the ground a little earlier. The brassicas, like cabbages and Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, they can go in a little bit earlier because they can tolerate the cold. But there are others that are a little bit more sensitive, like tomatoes and eggplants and peppers and melons, beans, that have to go in after the danger of frost has passed, usually. Around here, it's late May, early June, before you're comfortable putting them in the ground. But there's options, lots and lots of options available.
One thing that we do is we start things inside and then transplant it out. So people are starting about now, but they know that they can't plant it outside until the soil gets up to about 50 degrees. So if you have an itchy finger, a green thumb, you start your plants inside. And I've started my kohlrabi, which is a brassica, and then I'll transplant that out as soon as it can survive.
Good idea.
We've done, most of our vegetables are started indoors under lights and with a heat mat. And then when they get tall enough, we happen to have a greenhouse, we can move them into the greenhouse and then out into the garden when when they can tolerate the nighttime temperatures. But really it starts really at the beginning of April, and then we can grow vegetables until we get a hard frost, which can be, you know, October, late October. So it's a 6-month growing season here.
Just to impress the listeners, Bruce and Christy, maybe you could tell us, what vegetables are you growing in your garden?
Which we aren't growing.
Yeah.
We've got tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, melons, onions, potatoes, peas, beans, carrots, parsnips, all kinds of lettuce, kale, what else? Celery. What am I forgetting?
Did you say potato?
I did say potato.
Beets?
We've got those berries.
Yeah, we've got berries and rhubarb and
summer squash, winter squash.
Apples, plums.
Okay, so
you have a lot of choice, really.
Now, if you grow a lot of vegetables, you can't grow flowers too, right?
No, you can always grow flowers. In fact, we started including flowers in with the vegetables. So marigolds that you like are good to plant with some vegetables. For instance, tomatoes, they deter pests that might be a problem with the tomato plant. So
yes,
there's a lot of collaboration in the garden.
Mm-hmm. So we grow a lot of vegetables. We find ourselves very popular in August and September.
True. I can attest to that.
And we bring some stuff down to the food bank and give a lot of vegetables to our friends. That's one of the joys that we get out of our gardening, mm-hmm. is to share what we have.
And do you have...
And share the experience, too, encourage people to, even if they have a small space, they can accomplish quite a bit, so.
And, you know, it's a lifelong learning experience. And it's, like, not a lot of activities you can continue to, certainly with sports, you can't continue to improve with age. But with gardening, you can become better and better and more knowledgeable over time. And so you get a real sense of accomplishment and growth, which I think is sometimes hard to find as you get older.
Yes.
Plus one of the big advantages of gardening is that the physical exercise that you get. As I was going through the garden the other night, I realized how important my balance was. Walking around the beds and the bending and the strength in the legs, and of course it's takes a lot of work this time of year to get the garden going, so that physical activity has been really good.
Well, one thing I wanted to share was that I was just happened to be, we lived in the DC area for a while, so I continued to read the Washington Post after we came out to Montana in 2007, but they just had an article in the Washington Post on the 8th of April, entitled, "This Simple Springtime Activity is Surprisingly Good for Your Brain." And it goes on to talk about all the research that's been done with people who are active gardeners and what benefits they get from that health-wise. Now, I just, if you don't mind my taking a minute, I would just like to read a couple of quotes from the article.
Please.
It says, "The research on this topic is more compelling than one might expect from an activity associated with sun hits and strong opinions about mulch," said Jordan Weiss, assistant professor in the Division of Precision Medicine and Optimal Aging Institute at the New York University Grossman School of Medicine. One recent study that included 137,000 participants aged 45 years and older found that people who engage in regular physical activity, including activities such as gardening and yard work, were less likely to report memory problems and limitations in daily functioning connected to cognitive decline. The link appeared to be partly explained by higher physical activity levels and lower rates of depression for people who garden. Gardening independently touches nearly every lifestyle factor brain health research has already confirmed matters. Physical movement, stress reduction, social connection, sleep quality, and sustained mental engagement. A separate longitudinal study which tracked participants from childhood into older adulthood found that those who reported gardening anywhere from rarely to frequently at age 79 had better thinking and memory skills and showed stronger cognitive performance relative to their childhood baseline than those who never gardened. So I thought that was a pretty interesting set of scientific findings.
Powerful. And looking at a consortium of research tidbits, this is from various research articles about plants and gardening, that it's a full sensory thing, touching soil, smelling flowers, watching leaves unfurl. It helps calm your nerves, and it actually lowers cortisol and helps to release serotonin, which boosts mood by increasing exposure to natural sunlight and fresh air. So there's so much good to do with plants, planting, and our bees. And I think that Bruce and Christy and Phyllis kind of have a perfect in on how to approach this. And so as we keep thinking about this, would you tell us about the community gardens, Phyllis, for those who might not have a gardening spot, and maybe how they could get involved in one of those? And maybe Bruce and Christy, you could add your experience so that people maybe in an apartment or unable to have a yard could find alternate pathways. Tell us about community gardens.
Well, there are several around. I know in Bozeman, there are actually ones that are regulated by the city, and you sign up for a spot, and if it's open, you can garden in one of their community gardens. They're all around the town. And there's a fee, but then it's returned to you at the end if you leave it cleaned up for the next person the next summer. And the problem is so many people are gardening that these are very few and far between now. It's hard to get it. In Belgrade, I know they have one of the churches has a large community garden area. And I'm hoping that the city will put some in around the Lewis and Clark Park, where they've just refurbished the whole park and put the new library. That would be wonderful for people that can't get to it or don't have water available, that sort of thing. One of the things we did, it's not a community garden, but we put in a sensory garden at the Gallatin Rest Home in about 2007 for all the reasons that you mentioned, the stress reduction, the socialization, the improve the mood for people that are no longer able to get out and garden, just to go out and feel the sun on your face and watch the birds and watch the flowers. And that was a huge project for the garden clubs in this area, and very successful. The residents and the families and the staff love to go out there, socialize. They have barbecues and just go out there and have music. So it's a wonderful area to watch nature slowly unfold.
It's just...
My mother was actually a resident in the Gallatin Rest Home, and she'd been a former gardener, and she was having a mental decline, but she just lit up when she got out into that garden. It just seemed to stimulate some of the longer-term memories that were still there for her, and it's just a wonderful activity for our garden club and for the residents.
And I've seen that too. We created a drive-by garden for those in wheelchairs at one point in our lives. Mm. And It was just at the level, a raised wooden garden planter, and they came outside, and just their expressions as they put their hands in the soil and turned it over and watered and planted flowers and veggies. And so if you do nothing else this summer, you might think about helping establish more drive-by gardens for those who are in wheelchairs.
That's a very good idea. I like that idea. Because it doesn't take up much space or maintenance, and it would give a lot of joy to people.
And they're very easy to manage. You know, there's not a lot of
bending
over to pick weeds or whatever. It's just very peaceful, and people just illuminate when they go outside in the sunshine. And also it's socialization for them as well, because generally there's a group. So, do you...
Gallen Rec Home has the raised bed, so that they really are at wheelchair level, and the residents that couldn't engage in other activities can fully participate in some of the gardening activities.
Great, great. Do we need to donate some flowers and plants there, or are they all fixed up?
Well, the auxiliary there has to purchase plants every year, the annuals. So the auxiliary is going to use Give Big this year to enlarge the garden with annual plants and other things that they need. So there's always that. Give Big would be wonderful for the garden there.
Yes. Okay, excellent.
You guys mentioned weeds. How do you manage weeds without using toxins, pesticides?
Yeah, it's a lot of bending over.
Yeah, we tried something that we read about because we have a big lot next door. And it is non-toxic, doesn't harm birds or little furry animals of any kind. And it's, you get a jug of vinegar, a gallon of vinegar, and you add a cup of salt and 3 tablespoons of any dish soap, like liquid detergent. And it kills weeds flat out dead, but it doesn't harm animals. It's non-toxic. You have to be careful if you're around plants that you like, because it doesn't discriminate, but it's perfect when you have a weed patch that you want to get rid of. And once they die, it's real easy just to pick them up that way. But that's something we discovered in the last year or two that we've been trying, and it's really been helpful.
Okay. And have you used the 30% vinegar instead of the 5%?
We just we're not knowledgeable about vinegars. We just bought some gallons of vinegar at the grocery store and brought them home. So school us up. Is there a better vinegar that we had no idea about?
I've heard about this, but it's like they recommend using 30% because, of course, the weed will die faster with the acid on it. Okay. But the other thing is you have to be very careful and use gloves and not splash it around because it will burn your skin. So probably the vinegar in the grocery store might be better.
Yeah, we have
it. We have the higher concentrate vinegar, particularly for, we have a gravel driveway and we get a lot of grass and weeds that come up on the driveway. And it's pretty effective in that context.
Okay.
And there's other strategies too to control the weeds. We've tried to do a lot of mulching in the beds around our garden, and that can hold the weed growth down.
Yes.
We also like to get out early in the spring and get control of the weeds before they really, really get cranking. Some people use weed mat in some of the beds to control the grass coming up in those beds. But you know, if you're going to be a gardener, you're going to be doing some weeding. There's no way around that.
Could I just ask, when you're mulching, how thick would you recommend the mulch should be? How deep? 2 inches? 3 inches? We like mulch, and we think it looks nice, too, to finish off a bed. But how do you do your mulch?
At the beginning on the beds, we mulched a little bit more thickly, maybe 2 or 3 inches, and then try to, each year in the spring, put another inch or inch and a half of mulch on the beds before things start to grow. Mm-hmm. We use a material called soil pet that we get in bulk, and that's been fairly effective. Mm-hmm. We still end up doing a fair amount of weeding, but it's not too onerous.
But it breaks down over time and adds nutrients to the soil too, besides being a preventer of weeds.
Right, that's a term.
I need to add here, in the light of full disclosure, that I've been to Bruce and Christie's garden in the summer times, and speaking of their weed population, I want to tell the truth about them. I went through their gardens front to back, looking everywhere. Vast gardens, vast large. I saw not one single weed. So whatever they do, pay close attention to what they said, because they have nailed this. Phyllis, have you had success with weeds?
You know, when I had a big garden, I had weeds, especially one that's called a pigweed that now MSU is growing to eat. I used to pull it by the wheelbarrow full. So I've converted to containers pretty much, except for my fruit and so on. Mm-hmm. And I have one little pollinator patch of flowers. But yes, if you can't bend over anymore, you can use containers, and that those are very easy.
Let me say, pigweed can get very big and thick.
We have a terrible plant story. Our kids got us the lot next door for Christmas a few years ago. We didn't tell him, don't tell him. We just got a smaller yard on purpose with a little flower bed. So here we have this entire lot. So we thought, okay, our list got all the weeds and old builder supplies that have been tossed there and rocks and everything out of it. Backbreaking labor. And then he tilled it up and we planted flowers, wildflowers. We went to Circle S and got the best wildflower seed. And then it rained and the crops came up and we had the most beautiful, fast-growing crop of healthy pigweed, 6 feet tall, within 2 weeks or three. We had to pay a person with a large tractor to come and mow it down and then to till it under. It is so bad. So I have intimate fears of pigweed.
But you can't eat it, right?
Yes.
We didn't know that. So someone's growing pigweed now for a food crop?
Yes, MSU is actually growing it and selling it to restaurants in town.
What do they do with it?
They eat it.
Well, I think they prepare it. I don't know, braise it, fry it, but it's supposed to be full of nutrients.
That's amazing.
You have a lemony taste to it.
Uh-huh. I still don't want another crop of pigweed. But we got all that up, and so we went this time, and we got wonderful native grass seed, thinking that nice native flowing grasses would be perfect in that whole lot next door. Planted it all. Mm-hmm. Arliss did it again. And what came up?
Wheatgrass.
The most terrible crop of wheatgrass, which is an invasive weed species. And both years, our neighbors totally panicked. Oh, no. Oh, no. Wheatgrass, it's going to go everywhere in the neighborhood. So we had to have that plowed under, too. Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
Uh-oh. Now, that'd be the cover.
That is sad.
I covered the whole lot with plastic. And then got stone.
River rock.
In, covered the whole thing, which got me in a lot of trouble with the HOA.
Everything
gets you in trouble with them. So sorry.
It was also a time when watering that year was only twice a week. We had a real water shortage. So the thought of planting another lot full of things that required water was part of our motivation. And we did have about a 12-foot wide berm on the front that's full of flowers
Anything like Bruce and Christie's.
Oh, no. But it's full of pollinators and bee balm and other things. And so at least we have the wonderful berm full of plants. So,
I think that was a good decision.
Yeah, that was.
One of the other benefits of gardening for us is that it's an activity that, it's a marital activity for us. That we spend a lot of time together out in our garden, engaged in a cooperative, pleasant activity. Usually pleasant. We have a scuffle every now and then.
Understandable. Oh, we found that too. Our lot is right along the front, and we're out there working on our berm, and we meet every neighbor that's walking by. We're in a walking part of the neighborhood, and we put benches on the berm so people could sit. And down the street there are facilities for older citizens and nursing home residents, and they've told us so many times how the benches in the middle of the flowers are very special for them.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, very nice.
Probably should have said it again, but everyone likes it except the HOA.
Yes. Well, they just need more education about the benefits.
They have to be educable.
There really are a lot of benefits.
They have to be educable first.
Okay, yes, moving right along. Yes, go ahead, Bruce.
You know, a garden can give you a real sense of purpose. We get up in the morning and typically have a discussion. What's the plan going to be for today? What do we want to accomplish? We'll establish a list of goals that we want to achieve out in the garden, and then we head out together and spend a number of hours working side by side in the garden. It's just a wonderful thing for our relationship.
Better than marriage counseling, right?
What's that?
Better than marriage counseling, right?
Cheaper. Well, maybe not cheaper.
No, but more effective. Oh, that's just beautiful, Bruce. And, you know, you can have a smaller garden, but you still get to go out every day and work with the flowers or the veggies, and you water and you tend them. And it provides physical activity, but also a sense of purpose and achievement through plant care. It's very soothing to the spirit, and the research in so many ways validates every aspect of gardening and planting and the outdoors. And what you said just sounds like a perfect marriage activity to go out and fuss over the plants.
Yeah, we need to have our areas of expertise, but we managed to work things out together, and it's just been great experience for us working together.
You know, I get up in the morning, I get my cup of coffee, and I just take a stroll through the garden and just spend time observing, looking to see what's happening, where there's a problem, then you need just to problem solve. What are you going to do about it? What are the plants isn't doing well? What's the cause? Is it a disease? Is it an insect? Is it some kind of predator?
Is it watering conditions? So you're constantly trying to problem solve, which is a kind of a higher level mental activity. And every year you're starting over and you have a new set of challenges to face and a new set of sense of accomplishment when you successfully navigate it. So in that sense, it keeps you rejuvenated, I think, and moving forward and not just sitting in front of the TV or your computer screen.
And right about now, as things are starting to grow in the perennial beds, it's quite a challenge for us to remember what's what.
Oh, isn't that so true? Yeah.
We don't have everything labeled, and so we try to strain our brains to remember the names of everything, and gradually they show us what they are if we don't remember what they are. So
between the two of us, we probably remember about 70% of the names.
So that leaves
Christy does 40, I do 30, and then the rest we look up.
I love that. And I was reading from the climate journalist Joe Slanger, who says that a new wave of research suggests that plants are indeed intelligent in complex ways that challenge our understanding. She notes that some tomato plants, when being eaten by caterpillars, fill their leaves with a chemical that makes them so unappetizing that the caterpillars start eating each other instead. And corn plants have been known to sample the saliva of predator caterpillars and then use that information to emit a chemical to attract a parasitic wasp that will then attack that caterpillar. Whew. So the plants are actually hard at work helping you guys.
Yes.
She says
that's very interesting.
They're alert, active processing beings, like that World Wide Web we talked about earlier, the Wood Wide Web, that they really correspond with one another in the studies. There's this whole new science, plant neurobiology, that shows they have an awareness we did not understand. And it says they can even recognize their caretakers. If somebody new and strange comes along, studies said they can sometimes differentiate that. And they communicate through chemical signals. And they can also smell humans because they can detect chemical compounds in the air released by human skin. And also when we exhale, breathing out, that gives them a clue to who we are because they can sense those chemicals. So the plants are working with us very, very hard.
So go out in the morning and says, hi, Christy, hi, Bruce.
Yeah. But I think those pigweeds were saying other things to us, so I don't know. I didn't like their language.
What about earthworms? Anybody have earthworms in your gardens?
Earthworms?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've had a lot of worms. Yeah. I think that's a sign of healthy soil. You want a lot of worms and microbes.
Yes, we never met an earthworm we don't like. Mm-hmm. Well, a Chinese proverb of old says, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is right now. So tell us about trees. You have beautiful trees and plantings around. What could you and Phyllis tell us about trees, Bruce and Christy?
Well, you have a large variety of options here in the valley for different varieties of trees and ornamental trees and fruit trees. And our way of gardening is just over the years, we find a variety of tree that we like the looks of, and we just stick it in somewhere. There's not necessarily an overall plan. And, you know, the local nurseries have quite a wide variety of tree options for those that are interested. What do you want to add there?
Well, right now, a lot of the fruit trees are starting to bloom, and of course, the pollinators are very excited about that. So we've been seeing a lot of that. And evergreen trees. The evergreen trees provide really good coverage for birds, and of course the berries on a lot of the trees different birds eat.
Yes.
We're a little nervous because the fruit trees have budded out, and we're supposed to get some really, really cold weather this next week. And that's one of the challenges of gardening in the Gallatin Valley. You can get early warm weather and the fruit trees bud out, and then they get hammered with the frost, and then you don't get any fruit for that year. But that's just part of the cycle of things and the disappointments that you have to deal with when you garden here. This is a difficult environment to garden successfully in, for sure.
Would you recommend people cover plants that they might have set out this next few days? Or how should is there a way not to just totally give up? I realize that the fruit trees we can't do much about, but what about if you planted a tomato plant?
Well, you shouldn't be putting out a tomato plant till probably around the 1st of June. I mean, the mistake that people make is we get some warm weather like we've had, and people get very excited, and they put their vegetables in the garden way too early. There are some general guidelines that you just have to use some good judgment. But if you have put something in the ground, you're worried about it getting frozen, you've got to cover it somehow. And you can do row covers, or you can just put a sheet or a bucket or a blanket, but you need to cover those tender plants over the next few days to give them a chance of survival.
Okay.
Right, and you don't want to use plastic because it'll freeze. With the tomato plants now, they have a new product called Wall of Waters, which is heavy-duty plastic that you fill up with water, and it encloses the plant, and it keeps it quite a bit warmer inside that. And so then your plant hopefully won't freeze if it's not that cold. So
our neighbor did that techniques. Last year, and it really was helpful for his tomato plants.
Yes.
Is there any plant that you have had a bad experience with that you thought would be good and turned out, no, I'm not going to do that again, other than pigweed?
Don't plant mint because that spreads like crazy.
Okay.
Yeah, or put it in a pot anyway.
Yes, you need it in a container.
Okay.
In a container.
Uh-huh. And I would say the same about horseradish.
Oh God.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
That can be a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various perennials, like Lismachia and some others, that really, you know, they're appealing in the sense that, you know, you think you can't garden, and you'll put something in and it's going to grow and cover a space, but certain ones can take over. You want to tell the story about the mycorrhizum? There are some things you have to be cautious about, put it that way. And the garden centers, when you buy plants, will should be able to help you with identifying what those are.
Yeah, I would say go to a qualified garden center. I mean, my first year here in the spring, the person selling plants on the corner told me the marigolds would be just fine to plant in March, you know. So watch out who you take advice from.
Right.
Yeah. Mr. Cashman is good.
And there are lots of educational offerings around the city. You know, different nurseries have different seminars, and there's and the Master Gardener program through Montana State University is a great way to learn about gardening.
Basics, yeah.
And
I think Cashman's had a seminar, a Saturday morning seminar, and I think Phoenix Nursery may have some seminars too. And you can get a hold of their schedules and just plug into programs that are of particular interest to you. And then there's Montana Ag Live, which is a PBS program that deals with all kinds of local gardening issues. That's quite interesting and informative.
Yeah, and Phyllis, could you tell people out there who might be interested how to contact the Garden Club, where they might also, we've just got about 4 minutes left, but if you could fill us in on how to reach the Garden Club.
Okay, Garden Clubs always love to have new members because we learn from each other. So the other thing is that all the Garden Clubs have a monthly speaker. Where our most recent one was about growing potatoes, which is very important in this area. So a garden club is an important thing to, you can learn from one another and socialize. The Belgrade Club has a Facebook page, Belgrade Garden Club, so you can look on Facebook. I don't know if, I think the Gallatin Gardeners has a Facebook page too. And they also have a sales table at the farmers market that opens up, so you can actually talk to them and learn how to join. But there is no test to join a garden club. They want people that need to learn or know a lot and can give a program to the rest of them. So we're doing something at the library on April 25th, and we'll be there with the cards with our Facebook page address and some seeds to give away to any gardener there. So look online with the digital world, and you should be able to find a garden club here in town.
Thank you, Phyllis. And just remember out there in the audience, the key mental health benefits of gardening include lower stress and anxiety levels, improved mood and emotional regulation, physical exercise that supports mental wellness, mindfulness practice through focused attention, social connection, sense of purpose and achievement, and creative expression and learning opportunities. All of that from the American Psychological Association. So let's all jump on the bandwagon with Bruce and Christy and Phyllis.
Any final words? We have a minute.
I feel gardening improves your mood and reduces anxiety, and that's what we need in this world. We need to step back and get back into nature. So gardening is a way to do it.
One other thing I would mention is that it's an activity that cuts across, it brings people together who might not interact with each other otherwise. It cuts across political differences. You know, we all have this shared interest in common, and you do tend to find people interacting with each other that might not interact with each other in any context. And I think that's a really good thing.
Well said.
So there really aren't any red and blue gardens that differentiate it. Okay, that is good.
No. We're all in the same war experience together.
Hey, thank you all. We appreciate it so much. What a program. Gallatin Valley, tune back in to Healthy and Happiness in the Future. And we say goodbye to the Gardening Show, and hopefully to have them again. See you later.